Welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin, your host, again. True Wealth, as always, is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. Been doing it a while, a few decades. How about just a little over two? Christian-owned and operated, which, you know, don't want to go off on that too much, but I'll tell you, you know, I had in church this weekend, a pastor made a really good statement. He said, people that hand you your business, their business card, and tell you they're Christian are basically trying to prey on the vulnerability of your trust. So I would be careful about that. Christianity should not be the lead in for business, okay? Your actions should show your faith. You don't have to tell someone your faith. There's a number of reasons I say that. Number one, unfortunately, like this pastor I heard say this weekend, he said, some of the worst businessmen you'll ever deal with lead off with their business card telling you they're a Christian businessman, okay? What does that mean? To me, being a Christian businessman means you operate by a certain level of integrity and ethics and all that. Your word is good. You know, who may dwell in the holy tent of the Lord type thing. You're not the things that God hates. You are the things that God loves. But really what it means is you have a righteous heart before the Lord, right? That's really to me what it's all about. That's the big thing that over the years God's kind of shown me, because I'm going to be honest with you folks. I'm like ridiculously human, terribly human. I grew up rough. I did a lot of rough things. I've seen a lot of rough stuff, you know what I mean? And I wasn't one of these people. When I became a believer, I wasn't one of these people that was instantly delivered from all my crutches and my sins. I mean, I was in college and it definitely changed my heart. There's no doubt it was an absolute transformation, but I still ran back, you know, as unfortunately this is not the prettiest verse, but you know, it basically says in Proverbs, as a dog returns to his vomit, you know, so basically so a man, you know, runs back to his sin. And I mean, I'm going to be honest, as a believer, I did that. And like a dog, I think Proverbs says, like a dog that returns to its vomit is a fool who repeats his folly. I did that as a believer. So, and you know, we're all human. There is a little sect of Christians that I'm familiar with that actually believe you can become perfect on earth. I think that is the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard. We have sinful flesh. That's why Jesus had to be part God and part man. Because if, you know, he had to experience all the harshest, hardest, toughest things that man endured, but he also had to have the God spirit to overcome it. That's why Jesus was tempted in the desert. That's why he hung on that cross, folks. I mean, I'll tell you, you got something to overcome, and you're afraid of the pain and the suffering and the sorrow. You got fear. Face the cross. You know, when they used to say face the cross or you know, go to the cross, folks, there's meaning there. The cross was terrible. The Romans were terrible. The centurions were terrible, unempathetic, you know, horrible people. I mean, who in the world would come up with crucifixion as a method of execution? I mean, who thinks of this crap, right? Who thinks of this trash? Sick people, but the cross was brutal. They didn't even, you know, they used rough hewn wood. I mean, they'd whip your back until it was shredded to just pure flesh and, you know, no water in the middle of the beating sun and you're hanging there. You have to push up on your feet where your nails are driven through to breathe for, you know, the entire day. And I mean, it just, I don't need to get into it, but it's folks, it's just, ugh. You know, terrible, terrible punishment and torture that Jesus endured. In fact, my belief is that he endured, I personally believe, this is just Kevin, I believe that Jesus Christ endured the worst beating of any man ever. And here's why. First of all, he was so pure that I think he could. His response mechanisms, his nerves, he didn't pass out. Most people pass out under the pain. That's he didn't pass out. And it was Satan's day. Okay. It was Satan's day with Jesus Christ in his domain. Sick, sad, heavy, hard, brutal, you know, just an awful, awful beating. And sorry to lean on that, but you know, the movie Passion of the Christ. I mean, think about passion. Okay. Now, I don't know. I guess I came up with this a little bit on my own, but I feel like I've been fairly successful in life. I've just done okay. But one thing, well, they've come up with, I've seen studies, people who are passionate about everything they do become successful at whatever they do. Okay. People who are seeking something to be passionate about. And I actually think I got this from like Joel Osteen and Tony Robbins, but there's some study that came out and I haven't been, I didn't spend the time trying to find it, but they basically interviewed people who were, you know, of different walks of life. And they came to the conclusion that people who are passionate about everything they do, no matter what they do, if it's mowing the lawn, they're going to do the best job they can. They're going to make it look good. They're going to take it to the T, to the nines, right? If they're cooking a meal, you better watch out. They're going to do a darn good job. If they're cleaning the house, get out of the way. They've got standards. They aren't walking around leaving slop behind. It blows my mind, folks, how many people, like even in my business, I have guys that'll, you know, we have to sort coins and we get hordes and, you know, just masses of stuff you wouldn't even believe. And then they get, you know, stored here and stored there. You would not believe the number of employees that I'll say, okay, for this project, we're going to accumulate all of the, you know, pre-1800 or whatever, British copper farthings and two pences and whatever, just as a stupid example. And when they get done, there's still stuff all over. And I'm like, well, why didn't you get that bucket? Well, I don't know. I just didn't feel like doing it right now. How about we just sell this and we'll get to that later? Well, why would you do that? I mean, there's certain people that just operate that way. It's just living in procrastination, not what we're supposed to do. So when they have the movie called The Passion of the Christ, he would have to have such an extreme level of passion. Colossians 3:23, whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men. Whatever you do, it says, whatever you do, if you're changing a tire on your car, whatever you do, if you're talking to a waitress at a restaurant, you do everything for the Lord with passion. You share that joy. You just share that passion that's within you. And folks, there's times the enemy gets his barbs in us and he pulls us down. And there's things that are scary in life. There's things that are tough. There's things that are hard. There's things we regret. There's people out there that struggle with all kinds of stuff. I know, from everything from addiction to marital problems to financial problems to, you know, the enemy wants you to define yourself by your failures. Do not allow that. Do not allow the enemy to allow you to define yourself by your failures. I don't care what you're dealing with. God made each and every one of you, okay? Every one of you has a purpose. Every one of you has a destiny. Every one of you has a meaning. Every one of you is important to God and to Christ, period. Okay? He literally, and he's got enough grace, and he's got enough mercy, and he's got enough blessing to go around. There's no shortage. And he handles and takes care of everything and everybody. And if we turn to him, we will be blessed. Okay? Bottom line. And that's the way God works. Now, people get into this, oh, I don't like prosperity theology, and which means they like poverty theology. But I've always said, I'm not a health and wealth mindset guy at all. But Jesus, God, wants you blessed. He came that you may have life and have it abundantly, right? He didn't come that you may be guilt-ridden and self-afflicted and beat on yourself and just sit there and, you know, and carry these heavy burdens around. That's what the devil does. And some of us get, you know, we get trapped into things that just, they grab a hold of us and we make stupid mistakes. You know, we've all done it. We've all done it. We've all spent money where we shouldn't have spent it. We've all said things we shouldn't have said. We've all done things we shouldn't do. In fact, if you're one of those people that hasn't, then more power to you. I admire you. I really wish that I was more like that. Unfortunately, I'm one of those people with tons of passion, which means I do everything with passion, including stupid things, right? Impulsivity. Growing up, I was ADD and all that stuff. Great excuse, right? But you know what I mean. I mean, I've always done, if I'm going to screw up, I'm going to screw up bad. You know, when I was a kid, I was literally well known in the schools for being in trouble a lot. I wasn't like evil and dark, luckily. But what I was out of control. And I think I liked attention maybe, or no, I was just really hyperactive. I could not control myself, you know? And so I've always had that kind of that drive, but it's taken me both directions. I mean, I've been down both roads of life. I've done a little bit of everything and it's given me life experience, which is great. But at the same time, a lot of stupid regrets. I think I've, you know, whatever. I mean, we all come from a different background and I think that you get my point. My point is God does want to bless us. Okay. So think of this. You're like, there's people out there that are like, no, I don't think so. You know, which is sad because I will say that I spent years thinking the same way. I kept thinking, you know, God doesn't want to bless us. That in order to show our humility, you know, we must live in poverty and we must go without. And I heard a story from a pastor one time who was living in utter poverty and really bad, needed money so bad, and prayed, God, please meet this need. And he had someone visit, and they wrote him a good-sized check. He said, look, I'm writing this check to you, okay? He said, the Lord is telling me to write this check to you. And the pastor said, oh, no, I could never take that check. We must give it to the church. And he went over, and he put it in the church, whatever, offering or whatever. And the pastor said he was sick. He was literally sick. He knew that God had given that to him, but he just out of a false pride, he couldn't let anybody know that he had a financial need as a pastor. He could not let anyone know that he had a financial need. And if you think about that, we have pride. I mean, we do. I mean, it's sad, but it's true. We all have pride. We all deal with it, and we've got to be careful with it because it gets the very best of us. Pride comes before a fall, right? Pride is the lead up to destruction. You know, God says in Jeremiah, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans for welfare and not for evil, to give you a future and a hope." Okay? I know the plans I have for you. What's he say? Plans for welfare and not for evil. Now, think about that. There's people now, we are to fear the Lord. Am I right? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. We are to fear and love the Lord. So we have to have a healthy fear of God, all right? And at the same time, realize that he is a loving, good God. Now, one thing that, you know, I guess can scare you a little bit, is where, you know, Jesus came and he dealt with the Pharisees, right? In Mark 7 or whatever, or all over, actually. And he just said, you brood of vipers, you know, he absolutely just devastated the Pharisees. The Pharisees of the time, folks, you've got to realize the Pharisees of the time were like, and this isn't a good term right now, but they were like our upper politicians, like our senators, our congressmen. They were famous. They were well-known. Their opinion mattered. they were supposedly super holy. They were telling people, you know, if your money's been dedicated to God, put it in the, you know, you can give it to the temple or instead of to your parents. In other words, what they called korban. It used to be that a family was responsible to take care of their parents in old age. And it still should be that way. Honor your father and mother, right? In the Bible, and you'll live a long, healthy, happy, blah, 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 right? We're supposed to honor and respect our parents. When we don't, we're miserable. Now, so many people have issues with their parents. Some of them are real, some of them aren't, okay? I've talked to people over the years, and if you know me, I talk. I talk to people, I get to know them. It's just who I am. Whether it's, you know, my years in banking or whatnot, okay? I've talked to people, and I've heard all the stories about the terrible dad and the terrible mom. And, you know, folks, there are, in my opinion, a small percentage of people, very small, that really have a legitimate gripe. A lot of the gripes and complaints that I hear from people about their parents are just off the rocker. I've, you know, there's people I've talked to that have, you know, devastated their lives, ended up in prison on drugs, you know, strippers, whatever. I a good friend of mine who's a pastor, who's now a bishop in a large organization, was telling me that he had a, he knows a guy who has a ministry who does rescue work, from strip clubs. And, you know, of course, the strip clubs hate him because he tries to get these women. He tries to at least share the gospel. And no, he doesn't go into the strip club and sit there as a patron and buy a drink and try to get him out. No, he, I don't know how he does it. But but anyway, he said like 75 to 80% of these girls are coming out of Christian homes. They're in rebellion. Okay, they're, it's the devil. I don't know what it is. I can't explain it to you. But for some reason, this is this. These are the people that that Lucifer gets a hold of, and the, you know, these are the people that get drawn away and pulled into this. But I've talked to people that are in that lifestyle, or have been, and listened to them make, "Oh, my dad was so bad, and he did. What'd your dad do? Oh, he just did blah blah blah. Did he molest you? Well, no, but blah blah blah." Or they'll imply it. That's when you're like, okay, look, that is out of control. I mean, I've, you know, I won't get into it too deep, but what, you know, right now we're in this equal rights, and it's, equal rights is the wrong term, because we're all made equal under God, right? That's inalienable rights. We're all equal, but this whole female empowerment over the male, which is a common ingredient prior to the slide or destruction of many nations. But one thing about it is that women now, we're in an era where we literally watch these things where they're like, well, you know, Tom Brokaw 27 years ago tried to kiss me at a party, and everybody's like, oh no, destroy his career, ruin him. Or Donald Trump, when he was a private citizen getting off the bus and he spoke some foul language about a certain part of a female body. He wasn't a believer. He never claimed to be a believer. Are you shocked? No. We didn't elect Donald Trump because he was a man of faith. We didn't elect him because he was a godly man. We elected him because we thought he was the best bet to help our country turn itself around. And because he was up against Hillary Clinton, who was so dripping with corruption, we didn't have a lot of options. Trump destroyed single-handedly many competitors or fellow, you know, I don't know what you call them when they're running for office, candidates. How about that? You know, he destroyed them. I don't know why. I mean, the stuff he did is impossible. I mean, he was very sharp and harsh with his mouth, but, you know, he spoke respectful of his father and his mother. He is full of dignity. And when you get people that are full of dignity and respect towards their family and towards their parents, you're going to see them flourish more. It's so important. It's so valuable that we honor and respect our parents. And that's, I don't, again, always know how I get on certain topics, but that one came up. Delight yourself in the Lord, Psalms 37, and he shall give you the desires of your heart. Again, God wants to bless us, but we have to be in line with his will. Our will must line up with the will of the Lord, right? He's our, that's what blessing is. Blessing is being aligned with God and then having, you know, there's verse after verse that says, you know, when we earn or get money that is given to us based on sin. In other words, I think there's a scripture that says, you know, there's scriptures like in Proverbs 15, I read the other day, great wealth is in the house of the righteous, but trouble is in the income of the wicked. You know, the sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord, but the prayer of the upright is his delight. And it, you know, it goes on like this, where basically the way of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord, but he loves the one who pursues righteousness. Grievous punishment is for him who forsakes the way. He who hates reproof will die. You know, you get into, we need to be open to constructive criticism. Open, a scoffer does not love one who reproves him. He will not go to the wise. You know, all these things. There's scriptures I was trying to find here where it talks about ill-gotten gains, basically, and I'm not seeing it. It's probably in a different chapter, and I was thinking it was in chapter 15. How about this? The Lord will tear down the house of the proud. We talked about pride a minute ago. He will establish the boundary of the widow, though. The widow needs help. You know, and I mean, this is, oh, here you go. Proverbs 15:27. He who profits illicitly troubles his own house, but he who hates bribes will live. So here's the deal. Bribes are interesting in the Bible when you read about them, by the way. It always warns the person receiving the bribe, and it even encourages, in some case, the giving of the bribe, which is crazy. I don't want to get into that theology right now, but it's very interesting. But as I said from the beginning, when you get a man that says, I'm a Christian businessman, I have run into a common thread that we're running into a group, a couple guys that are in town that are part of a family that purport themselves to be Christians, and part of their family's involved in a big ministry, you know, and I mean, it goes on like this, right? You get whatever siblings that are doing good and they're making the name good of the family, and then another member of the family is out selling bad financial investments, annuities, and selling these terrible annuities that are just devastating people, absolutely devastating. I mean, I have been in the middle of this for many, many years. I've been licensed in every line of insurance there is. You can find someone who's insurance licensed who's selling financial stuff, which, by the way, run when you see that. The thing that I have over them is I not only do I have a Bachelor of Science degree in actuarial science, I've also operated as an actuary and a general liability auditor for large insurance corporations. Actuaries are the ones that configure the actual policies and the plans. They're the ones that run all the statistical analysis, calculate all the probability, figure out the likelihoods. They use all the different mortality tables or, you know, whatever table applies to, you know, different things and build the policy. And the annuities were the scam of the century, just the scam of the century. And I still to this day cannot believe how many people get them. Do you know, folks, when you get an annuity, it's simple, okay? You can't get your money all back. So just say you had $100,000. I don't care if it's in a 401k IRA. I don't care if you go to your bank. I don't care where you get it. You give them $100,000 for an annuity. And in 2 months, something comes up and you need the money. You got surrender charges up the wazoo. Excuse me for the term, but out the ear. Okay. You gave them $100,000. Now you want your money back? Nope. You can't have it all. You got to pay all these fees and all these surrender charges. Why? Because all this money went into the pockets of the salespeople in the corporation. They're sucking you dry. Then they have it set up. They keep your money for way too long. You get 5-year, 7-year annuities. They can lie, vehemently lie. I mean, the signature page will, they'll check a box, and they don't even have to check it when you sign, that says, I've received no paperwork. I haven't read anything. I don't know what I'm signing. And that's legal. And that's literally on the signature page of all these annuities. That's why Washington gives you a 10 business day look at over period. Federally, most, if a state doesn't have a look at over period, the federal guideline is 30 days, a 30-day look at over period. Cooling down period. Why? Because they're bad investments. You cannot do that. You don't get a look at over or a cooling down period on stocks or bonds or anything else. Why? Because a deal's a deal, and because the SEC controls it. Now, when you buy an annuity, I just hate the term, but I don't, or life insurance or whole life or bank on yourself or whatever. Folks, please hear me. I'm telling you, I'm seeing stuff. It's bad. It's bad, bad, bad. You cannot get your money out. Or the other thing they have is these premium bonuses where, you know, you give them $100,000 and they show you a 10% premium bonus on your statement. So it shows that you have $110,000 and you're in the NASDAQ or the S&P 500 fund. And they say, look, the S&P has gone up 6, 7, 8% the last 2 years or whatever. And that's the fund you're in. And well, oh, but you're in a certain, the truth is you're not going to get any of those returns. You're in their S&P 500 fund, which basically, if there's any profit, it goes to them, and it basically is capped out at paying you 1% a year, even though you can't get your money back without a 20% surrender charge, back-end fees that are terrible. Eventually, they get old folks. I ran into a lady here a while ago who'd been annuitized. She had like $850,000 that they had annuitized, okay? Let me explain something to you here, okay? So she had $850,000, okay? And she said, well, I'm getting 4.5%, right? So she says she's been annuitized, and she said she's getting like 4.5%. So she's getting, so she gives them 800, after first she buys the annuity, they take all the commissions, you know, everything. I mean, they just clean your clock. The bankonyourself.com is even worse because they put all your money in an account, pay you nothing for it, and then tie a whole bunch of insurance premiums to it and just sit there and drain it dry with all these insurance packages and premiums you don't need. Long-term care, accident and disability, you know, life and whatever and health and all kinds of stuff that's just overcharged. So this lady says to me, well, I'm getting 4.5%. I'm talking to her. She goes, I listen to your show. And she goes, but I'm getting 4.5% on my money. I said, how'd you figure? She goes, well, I gave them $850,000 and they're paying me like $3,200 a month or whatever it was. I said, on what? How are they? Why are they paying you? It's an annuity. There are no dividends. She goes, I don't know. So I said, well, let's look into it deeper. So she digs out her paperwork. Oh, okay. Well, I just recently did this. And so you were annuitized. And then we figure out, oh, she got annuitized. So they took her $850,000. The money's gone. She'll never have it again, never see it again, never see that number on a statement again. She has basically agreed to accept an amount of what she thinks is 4.5% over the next 25 years, okay, or 22 years, I think it was, or whatever it was. I'll figure it out here real quick. It's over the next 25 years. Okay. And then if she dies, she says, then a portion of it goes to the next person. So just understand this. Okay. So she gives them $850,000. This may go over some of your heads. Okay. She's getting $38,250 a year. Okay. That's 4.5% of $850,000. Okay, so she gives them $850,000. She's getting $38,000 a year for 25 years. Okay, so if I take $38,000 a year, if I take $38,000 times 25 years, that's $950,000. So she gives him $850,000. If she lives, okay, if she lives, now she was about 68. So she'd have to live till she was about 93 to get all this, okay, which is way beyond the mortality tables, way beyond. That's problem one. Problem two, she gave him $850,000. She's getting $34,000 a year or whatever, $38,000 a year for 25 years. The total payback over 25 years is $950,000. So she's making $100,000 over 25 years on $850,000. So if you take $100,000 and you divide that, which is her total profit, if she lives 25 years and gets all of her money, okay? So if you take $100,000 over 25 years on $850,000, she's not even, she's only getting like 1/8 of 1% interest on her money at best. And that's with the fact that she'll never give her money back. She can never have it. It's gone. It's gone, folks. So it's the silliest, foolish, most silly thing. If you think about it, it's crazy, reckless foolishness. She could go to the bank and buy a CD that pays 1% a year. Okay. And take out and draw from the principal plus her CD income. And that money in 25 years, she'd still have a few $100,000 left. If this is going over your head, I'm sorry. What they're doing is they're saying, here, I'll keep it simpler. They let's say it was $100,000 and they say, okay, we're going to pay you $4,000 a year. You give us $100,000. You're never going to see the money again. It's been annuitized. It's gone. We're going to give you $4,000 a year for 25 years. Okay. Well, if you take $4,000 a year for 25 years, that's $100,000. So basically they take your $100,000, you can never get it back, and then they basically pay you back your money without any interest over 25 years. What happens? Well, what's that $100,000 worth? What's that $4,000 monthly payment worth 25 years from now? Literally that $4,000 a month 25 years from now is probably going to be the cost of a tire on a car. Literally. I mean, it literally is that bad. And so this is just one facet of it, folks. I promise you, the math, annuities, life insurance, whole life, disability, long-term care, all of this stuff thrives on you not using it, on the assumption that they use mortality tables against you. Statisticians are smart, okay? They know how to calculate things. I did it for a living. Trust me, okay? They say liars figure and figures lie. Now, when I was in the business running all these numbers and crunching, they didn't say show us how to take advantage of people. They just told you what numbers they wanted. They said, amortize this program, do this kind of program, do this kind of program. And that's what we provided for them because that's what they told us we wanted. They wanted. It wasn't my business to tell them this, that, or the other. So it was a little bit different because we were just regurgitating numbers. But I knew what they meant and I knew what they were for. And I was young and I was naive. I was just in my 20s out of college. But, you know, enough said. What the point is there is this local family has kind of come on the rise and they've made some pretty good money capitalizing on the we're Christian business people mantra. That's all I'm saying. Be careful, be wise, okay? Just please. I'm telling you, don't do it. Now, I will purport myself. I believe I have strong financial understanding and knowledge and experience. I'm not trying to be prideful or braggadocious. I'm just telling you. Now, the other thing is, that's just one tip of a big iceberg, okay? Now, you want to just save your money right now, and I'm always like, just buy precious metals, buy gold. I mean, and you're like, well, you know, my broker said, my friend said, my this, that, and the other folks. Now, I'm not going to disagree with you. The whole world's against it. Why? Well, how is the world doing right now biblically? I mean, are we doing pretty good? Are we, you know, are we in line? How in line are we with the Bible right now in America or the world? First of all, what percentage of the globe even follows or cares about the Bible? See, we're just getting more exposed over time to the rest of the globe that doesn't care about the Bible anyway. Not one bit do they care about the Bible. They are either Muslims into the Quran or Buddhists or atheists or whatever, or Catholic. And no offense, you know, to some of those born again believer Catholics. But the fact of the matter is the church is so filled with human tradition. They've lost touch with the personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Jesus frees us. Religion binds us. Okay. So these people, we're getting exposed more and more and more. We can see that Christianity, even though it's flourishing and growing like a weed and miracles are happening every day, people are coming to the Lord. There's incredibly wonderful ministries. God's doing incredible things, etc. In general, as a nation spiritually, we're crumbling apart. I remember back in the 80s when I was listening to, you know, what percentage of people are, you know, churched. And, you know, now I look at historical graphs of, you know, people who claim to be evangelical Christians or something like that. And it just keeps going down and down. I remember years back, I saw, you know, this demographics thing where I wish I could find it. This is why I hate Google. I used to get such cool organic searches, man. I used to find some of the coolest stuff, right? Now everything's got an agenda. Everything's left this, and, you know, it's terrible. But, you know, now I'm looking at this. They're showing the changes in percentages, but then they say the terminology of religious identity has changed. And so somebody who used to consider themselves an evangelical no longer does, because evangelical means extremist and radical Christian. I'm reading these stupid articles from these left-wing yin-yangs that are trying to analyze the, you know, believers, okay? So here's what's going on. The fact of the matter is we have seen a drastic drop in the churchedness of America, okay? Here's the thing I heard back in 69, graduating students from high school was like, I don't even remember, I'll butcher the numbers, but basically they flip-flop. It was like 38% considered themselves evangelical born-again Christians and 4% considered themselves atheists. They did some studies back east here, I don't know, a decade ago or 5 years ago, whatever. It was flip-flopped. It was like 30-some percent of the kids consider themselves atheists and only like 4 or 5 or 6% consider themselves born-again evangelical Christians. We are becoming a majorly unchurched society, and we are judging everything wrong. If we do not have the values of the Bible at the core of who we are, okay, we're done. We are done at that point. We have nothing to base anything, you know, similar on. Matthew 23, Jesus says, "You blind guides." He says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites, for you tithe mint and dill and cumin and have neglected the weightier provisions of the law, justice and mercy and faithfulness. But these are the things you should have done without neglecting the others." He says, "You blind guides who strain out a gnat and swallow a camel. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you clean the outside of the cup and of the dish, but inside they're full of robbery and self-indulgence. You blind Pharisees, first clean the inside of the cup and of the dish so that the outside of it may be clean also." He goes on, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs, which on the outside appear beautiful, but inside they're full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. So you too outwardly appear righteous to men, but inwardly you're full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites." This is Matthew 23 still. "For you build the tombs of the prophets," and I can go on, and I won't. So basically, we, as people of God, God sees what's on the inside of our hearts, and we become religious, and we have, and then we become self-righteous. And, you know, there's scripture that talks about, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof. And in Timothy, and it talks about, I think that's in 2 Timothy or whatever it is, at the end times. This is where we live now, folks. We live in the end times. I mean, there's no question that we are pompous, we're pious, we're arrogant, we're overly self-assured, and we're overly self-confident, and we, you know, we're arrogant, we're judgmental. Oh, you're a racist. How often do you hear all these flagrant terms? Racist. You're a racist, really. I mean, they have abused that word so bad, and people tolerate it. I'm not a racist. Don't call me a racist. I'm, you know, oh my gosh, they're going to call me a racist. Folks, a racist is not somebody. They make you think. If I look at a man and I see, oh, he's African-American descent or black, oh, I'm a racist. You know, if I do something different because of his nationality, do you want to know something? Because of the overemphasis on race lately, or over the since Obama, I actually make an effort to go above and beyond and out of my way to make people like that feel comfortable. They're being told by the media, oh, you know, whites don't like you. And they're trying to create this terrible division, which Obama did a great job of, right? Destroying our country, tearing it asunder. I mean, is that what America is? No. America's a melting pot. And the fact of the matter is, folks, we have let droves of people in this country that do not belong here. This whole ridiculous argument about illegal immigrants as if they're just immigrants and, oh, America's based on immigration and you know, that's what made us who we are. And they're lying. They're not even the same term. There is a proper legal channel by which you can enter this country. Great, fine, no problem. Come on in. Just line up, sign up, and go through the process, because when you get done, you're an American. And you've studied our nature, our country, our history, our Constitution. I know people who've done it. I know a number of them. And I know some that are so dumb they don't know what they learn. And I know some that are phenomenally brilliant that are, you know, transformed by it. But they still know, a lot of them come out of there knowing a heck of a lot more about the Constitution than most of us do. Isn't that what it should be to become a Christian or an American? Shouldn't you have to earn it? Yeah, but we have people, I mean, you got Obama as president. Well, you know, I just want to welcome every immigrant into this country. Some of you, you know, came over, some of your relatives, he says, quote, came over on the Mayflower, and some did this, and some just jumped the Rio Grande just yesterday. Welcome to America. You know, really? That's who we are? No. And I'll tell you what, I got a friend who is a doctor, an experienced doctor in economics now. He got his PhD like in 1988. He worked on the Consumer Price Index Board, from which he resigned under Clinton for ethical reasons. He's the one that I learned. When I learned, one thing I've tried to explain to you folks, there's inflation, real inflation, and then phony inflation. Real inflation is the fact that, you know, everything's going up 6-7% a year, or whatever you want to call it. Phony inflation is, you know, there is what the Consumer Price Index calculates. The Consumer Price Index, folks, under Clinton, the Clintons are special, aren't they? They do dirty, dirty stuff. So Clinton had to look good when he was in office. So what did he do? He said, there's too much technology. There's too much change. We've got to clean this thing out. We got to change it. We're using an old system. We're using old hat items. You know, we're using things that are just changing too fast. And now we got all these new things. We got computers and we got cell phones and we got all these things. And they're just not in there. And so we need to get rid of stuff. So you know what he did? He removed the vast majority of food, transportation, real estate, and energy costs. And he left little dabbles and dibbles of it here and there so it looks okay. But you know what he did is he took what you as an average American citizen spend 85% of your disposable income on, and they removed it. So when they say, oh, the consumer price index, aka the inflation rate's 1.25%, it's not right, because what you live on is going up every day. The cost of food's crazy. You know, lately we've seen gasoline going up. Heating our house, we bought, I have a house that's too big for me. And heating that house over the last 8 years or whatever it is, it just goes up and up and up and up and up. Cooling it, up and up and up and up and up. Cost of a car, up and up and up and up and up. You know, you got food, transportation, real estate. I don't have to tell you what has happened to real estate. I mean, has run-of-the-mill average real estate gone up 1.25% a year? No way, man. Houses in the mid-range. I mean, my son picked up a house, I think probably, you know, maybe 3 years ago in the mid-2s. Now it's worth in the upper 3s, and it's just in a normal development because those houses are on fire. Well, that ain't no 1% a year, but people have to live still. So they're still making the same income, and then they lie to them and say, oh, consumer price index isn't up, so you don't get a raise, so you can't live. So what happens? People end up in debt. People live with nothing. They borrow money from the bank, and then they get hurt. They start to hurt so bad, they got to go on government food stamps or something just to feed the family. That ain't right, folks. You know, a good job's a good job. I mean, and if we can't sustain that, in other words, I talked to business owners that are like, I was talking to a guy yesterday that I know pretty well that owns a big business out in Idaho, and he's got people at $7 and $8 an hour and, you know, at low end wage level stuff. And I'm like, that's terrible. I mean, that's sad. He goes, well, that's just the market, and that's where my pricing structure is. And if I pay more than that, these people, you know, I'll go broke. And I'm like, well, then we need to change the system, because these people have got to make more money than that. It's not right. Now, if you're a high school kid learning how to work and you just want a job, great, go get it. But honestly, when minimum wage has gone up, you know, maybe 60% since I was in college or high school, you know, 30 some years ago. I mean, come on. There's no way. This is not even making any sense to me. And anyway, I was saying, my friend who's a doctor in economics, he quit the CPI board for ethical reasons. But he's also the one that has shown me, well, initially woke me up to a lot of the different inflationary factors that affect everything. And just the fact that, you know, you, the average American, you can't live. It's tough, man. Do you know my dad back in the 60s, which you don't, he used to sell life insurance. $10,000 life insurance policy was a good policy. $10,000. You can barely bury somebody for that now. I mean, this is what's happened to us. So you need to be aware and be wise. Do not annuitize your money in anything at all. What you do is you buy metals, okay? You don't sit and get caught up. What I was saying a little bit ago is there is true inflation. The world hates metals. People are like, well, my broker won't agree with me. My banker won't agree with me. Everybody says I'm crazy to buy gold or silver. Well, why do you need their approval? Does everybody, are they the same people? Why don't you ask them if you should follow the Ten Commandments? Ask them if, you know, maybe they think you should go to church for the weekend, or maybe you should raise your family in a Christian school. You know, what advice are they going to give you there? Who cares, right? Because God is your God, and you obey your God. You don't obey man. It says, you know, in, was it John 5:44, you say that you believe, but you seek the glory that comes from man rather than the glory that comes from the only God. And that we need to seek glory from God. God gave us the truth. The whole world is against you when you want to buy metals. Why? Because it's simple. God made them, put them in the ground. You know, the elements there are hard. No one can change them. It's the real deal. It goes up over time. People are like, well, gold hasn't done squat, and gold hasn't. Oh, really? Well, that's funny, because I look at the world post 9/11, right? Everything before 9/11, forget about it in a way, right? That's when everything changed. I even think that the trade towers could have been the mystery Babylon. And I think after that, a lot of crazy stuff is going to happen. And it already is. Am I right? Okay. So you've got this going on all the time, you know? And, you know, and we live in a time when I don't think that anything prior to 9/11 even matters. That's when the world changed. So what does that give us? 2001 to 2011 to 2018, 17 years, right? So in 17 years, we've had gold go from, you know, 275 to 1300, right? So it's gone up about, you know, whatever. So you take 1300 divided by 275. So it's up 4.4. It's worth 473% of what it was 17 years ago, which means it's gone up 373%. Take 373 divided by 17, you got 22%. Silver, we had silver as low as 3.5, but it was around 4, 4.25, and we're at, you know, 17. Same thing. You take 17 divided by 4.25, if you're stretching, you got 400%. You got a 300% gain in 17 years. Take 300 divided by 17, you got 17.7% growth. And that's with silver down in the tank right now. So don't get fooled and lied to. There is no investment, no investment out there that has performed like this over time. And now, here's the other thing that's great. In the meantime, the metals have been way up, right? We had the huge, we had a run up for that went for like 8, 9, 7 to 10 years. How's that for counting? 8, 9, 7 to 10. I don't know where I learned that. That maybe that came with my college degree in mathematics and statistics. But the bottom line is we've had highs. We're in a low. We're in a low. We're in a valley, right? But it's holding its own. It's still going up 10, 12% a year the last few years, right? But you've got 17 years of solidity, of firmness, okay? So what's more likely to double in value in the next 5 years? Stock market or precious metals? Pretty obvious, right? Especially when you got silver at, you know, $17 and it's been to 50. You got gold at under 1300, it's been to 2000. What's more likely to double? How about what's more likely to crash? Silver, gold, or the stock market? Well, the metals have already corrected. But what they do is when the metals are climbing nicely for a long period of time, you get at the very end, you get these Fidelity, Magellan, and the hugest mutual fund companies in the world. They come in and leverage, you know, hundreds of millions of ounces of contracts. They drive them up with futures, and then they crash them down with shorts, short contracts. Destroy it. Everybody's faith, destroy it. Central banks hate it. Yes, they hate it when you buy metals. Your banker hates it. They lose control of your money. The IRS hates it. They lose control of your money. The Fed hates it because they can't print more money. The Treasury hates it because they don't get to make more bonds. Your stockbroker hates it because he doesn't get to play with your money and call you every year and say, I think we need to move to this investment or that, because he doesn't get to scrape another 2 or 3% a year off every time he blinks. And also he doesn't get to churn it and burn it, and he doesn't get residual income. Yeah. They all hate it. But look, it reminds me of Trump. We've learned through the IG report, the whole world was against this guy. The whole world. Everybody in every significant position, the corruption, all this stuff. But what happened? He won. Why? Because he had God on his side, period. Whether he loved God or not, I don't know. But I'll tell you what, God loved him and God took care of him. God placed him properly. Think of precious metals like Donald J. Trump. Okay, God made them. God said their wealth. God's got them in his own house where you and I are supposed to spend eternity. That is 1,500 miles wide, 1,500 miles long, and 1,500 miles tall. And I know that you probably can't even comprehend what that even means. Half the United, over, you know, 2/3 of the United States width, tall, wide, and long. That's a big place. You're going to spend eternity just to walk through the whole place. I mean, it's so ridiculous, right? It's good enough. God's got it filled with gold. God said, and that's after you, us, when the day of wrath comes, we'll be chucking our gold and silver in the streets as we're being saved by God out of his wrath at the very end. The Bible says it clearly. Jesus comes on earth as a baby. What's God send him? Wise men with what? Gold, frankincense, and myrrh. You know what one of the interesting traditions says? It says that when Adam and Eve left the garden, and they wouldn't leave. They stood outside the garden, and they said, we want back in. They didn't just walk off and say, okay, see you, God. They sat there and whined and moaned and complained and cried and begged for mercy and forgiveness. But God had to let them go to just let the whole plan play out. Finally, it said a cherub brought them gifts. It brought them gold, frankincense, and myrrh from the garden. And then it says that Adam and Eve stored that gold in a place in Egypt. And then when Christ was born, the wise men were guided there by the Holy Spirit to get these golden rods and actually bring them to Jesus. That's one of the cool theories. But gold and silver, folks, that's what it is. That's what it is. That's where it's at. All this garbage I'm telling you about annuities, all that, you don't need to know any of that. Just obey God. You put your money in, you're going to, I mean, even worst case right now, you make 5, 10% a year, whatever, 15, whatever. But your money's preserved. It's solid, okay? And silver dollars, cheap, 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 bulk Morgan dollars, peace dollars, whatever. We got it right now. Folks, just get in here. Take your money now. It's cheap. It's fair. It's right. The markets are flattened out. And folks, there's too much going on. And I ran out of time. I always do. But I'm just telling you. 444-0044. Last quick thing. Don't forget about the Google reviews. If you do one Google review, you get a silver dollar. You do three reviews, do like Google, Bing, and Yahoo or something like that, we'll give you two silver coins, okay? It's that simple. Just call us, prove you did it. One for a Google, but go to Bing. You know, check Bing and Yahoo or whatever. Leave us good, positive, five-star reviews, and we will take care of you. We'll give you a silver dollar or two silver coins. Whatever. I mean, what a bargain. Just a little bit of work. Support us. Say you did some business with us. That's preferable that you've done business. So thanks again for tuning in. Take care. God bless. Have a beautiful week. Bye-bye.